He scores! Gilmore scores! The ball three left!
Off the glass and left corner to Aguilla. Aguilla in the left circle. Passing to Yale. A shot saved. Made by Aguilla. Rebound. Another shot. They score! The Flames win it! Yeah, baby!
They score!
And the sea of red erupts!
Flames talk starts now on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's Pat Steinberg and Logan Gordon.
We are underway this hour. Let's get things going. It is Thursday, March 28th. Flames Talk on Apple, Spotify, Google, Amazon, or wherever you get your podcast getting going. Steinberg and Logan Gordon along with you on this Thursday. Did I say Wednesday? Yeah, it's definitely Thursday.
It's one of those days.
Thursday, March 28th is the date as we get things going here on Flames Talk today. It's that time of year. It's lineup shuffle time if you're the Flames, if you're a team like the Flames. And indeed, there are some lineup shuffles as they get ready for Thursday night against St. Louis. Some interesting things to sink our teeth into. And honestly, now's the time to do it. I mean, if you're the Flames, this is the time to try some different things, as we've talked about at different times throughout the week, Logo. First of all, hi. Hi, Logo.
Hi, Patrick. Happy Wednesday.
Happy Tuesday. This is the time to do things that maybe you wouldn't do if you're fighting for a playoff spot, some things that maybe you wouldn't do if you are still in the thick of things. So, sounds like we're going to have a forward line blender and a complete different look to the forward lines. Part of that because Andrew Mangiapane is not going to play Thursday night in St. Louis. He's day-to-day with an undisclosed something or other. So no Mangiapane on Thursday night in St. Louis. And so, yeah, put the lines into a blender. Why not? Mangiapane out. Dryden Hunt, I believe, is coming back in. And I think he would have come back into the lineup anyway. I think even if Mangiapane didn't have something going on, because his ice time did get reduced a little bit on Tuesday in Chicago, didn't play as much in the third period. But I think Hunt would have come back in anyway. They probably would have been rotating through somebody else to get Hunt back into the lineup. But you know, if reports from St. Louis are the way that we're thinking, it definitely sounds like there's going to be some different looking lines. And as I said, I mean, why wouldn't you go differently right now? And as Ryan Huska said when he spoke Thursday morning, it's not like the lines they've been using have been working. They've lost four in a row. They've scored six goals. So just overall, probably time to try some different things over the Flames.
Yeah, and I think what Husk says is bang on there, especially from an offensive standpoint. They're just not in a groove. They haven't been able to find any sort of rhythm. Even the lines that we're used to being the ones that drive this team on a pretty consistent basis, right? Like the Backlund-Coleman line or Zary, Pospisil, and Kadri. Even those lines are kind of struggling right now, Pat, and there's a lot that goes into it. We've talked about it ad nauseum about how the UFAs have changed things and the approach has changed for this group, or even just the mindset's changed now that they're this far out of a playoff spot. But that doesn't mean that they just give up and ride this thing out for the last however many games until the end of the regular season. There's still lots to prove. We went through some of the milestones on Wednesday's show that are going to be important individually to guys, and you're right, the result hasn't been there, and I don't think the process to get the result has been there either, and that's probably a big reason why we've seen Ryan Huska do what he hasn't really done this year a whole lot, and that's hit the blender as hard as he has ahead of this game against St. Louis, we think.
You know, you can look at the last few games, they've been a lot of the same lines, so sure, we haven't got the results that we wanted, so it's an opportunity for us to switch a few things up.
Don't know exactly the way things are going to go, but couple things, you know, you're probably going to keep a couple of pairs together. I would imagine Backlund and Coleman would stay together. That might be the only forward pair that stays together, honestly, if you're the Flames. Couple of things that I think are important. Coronado's going to stay in the lineup, and that to me, I almost think, Logo, that's a non-negotiable at this point. I mean, if you're the Flames, there's no reason to not be playing your young players, and Coronado's a guy who needs the reps. Coronado's a guy who needs the NHL time, and he's a guy who needs to continue to develop and progress and learn a little bit more. I mean, this is a game against the St. Louis team that is fighting for their playoff lives. This is a game against the St. Louis team where they're desperate and they don't really have much margin for error anymore. You know, if they're going to chase down a Vegas Golden Knights team that's six up on them, they're going to have to win a bunch of games in a row. And so they're going to be desperate against the Flames. So there's a good opportunity for Coronado to play in kind of that type of spot against a team that is still playing for something and a team that is still desperate. I think games like this, you know, the Oilers game, the Kings game that are coming up here for the Flames, I think these are good learning opportunities for Coronado. So I'm glad that he's staying in the lineup. I'm glad that he's not coming out. As I've said, I don't think he should be sat at any point between now and the end of the regular season. I think he should play 11, 12 games in a row to wrap it up in the NHL, and then he can go back to the Wranglers and help them for their playoff run. But that, to me, would be point number one, is that good to see that Matt Coronado staying in the lineup.
It is, and I almost see it very closely to the Dustin Wolf situation with Matt Coronado in the sense of needing NHL reps as much as possible, and it's a smaller sample size for sure for Matt Coronado than in Dustin Wolf's time in the AHL. There's no debating that, but Matt Coronado had a very, very good stretch in the AHL this season and kind of proved, I think, this most recent call-up that I don't know that there's a lot to garner at the American Hockey League level for him other than reps. And if you want him to be, you know, a full-time NHLer heading into next season and a guy that contributes to your lineup, why wouldn't the NHL be the spot for him right now? And the more that he can take from these last few games for the Calgary Flames in different scenarios, hopefully some power play scenarios, then I think all of that's just going to lead to an easier transition for him next year in his second full year of pro hockey. So I kind of see it very similar to Dustin Wolf, Pat, where I don't know, other than really consistent playing time, what the AHL has to offer for him at this point. I think the next challenge is in the NHL
level. Yeah, and I think that that's something that I'd like to see going forward here, is get him some power play time. You know, really, like, try to get this guy as much confidence and as much belief in his game as you can going into the offseason. It's only going to help him going back to the Wranglers. If you've got a confident Matt Coronado who's been getting some power play time, and maybe starting to see some offensive results a little bit more than he has at other points this year in the NHL, that only helps him going back for the American League playoffs. That only helps him going into the offseason. So, yeah, maybe he plays on the fourth line Thursday in St. Louis. Maybe we see that for a few more games. But for some sort of extended run, I think some time with Huberdeau or some time with Kadri or some time on the Backlund line would do him really or would do him a lot of favors. And, you know, I think some time on the number two power play unit would do him a lot of favors. Doesn't have to be every single power play shift that the number two unit takes. Maybe you can swap him and Blake Coleman. But look, Mangiapane's not playing on Thursday night. Isn't that a perfect opportunity to get Coronado in, go Coronado, Backlund, and Zeri as your three forwards on that power play too for a little bit? Why not? There's really no reason not to, as things stand right now.
Yeah, and that's kind of the point. And I mean, I feel maybe even a little differently than you do in that point, from the perspective of I would put him out every time the second unit goes. I don't see why not at this point. Unless the process for whatever reason hasn't worked for the head coach and he's, you know, desperate to try to make this guy earn it. Knowing that he has the fallback of the fact that the Wranglers are not mathematically, but almost guaranteed to at least see one postseason round coming up in a couple of weeks, I don't know why you wouldn't feel the need to push him higher up in the lineup and to push him into some of those opportunities he hasn't gotten earlier this year. I would, as a matter of fact, feel more comfortable seeing him out there on a consistent basis in some of those areas.
Sure. I mean, you know, I definitely am not going to be opposed to it. That's for sure. I'm just, anything you can do to get him more high leverage NHL playing time down the street. This is one of your most important players going forward. You take a look at this roster right now and who's on the NHL roster right now. And I hope Jacob Pelche gets one of those regular recall spots between now and the end of the regular season too. But Jacob's in the American League trying to get his mojo back. But you've got Coronado, you've got Zeri, you've got Pospisil. I'd put Shillington into that mix and Wolf. Those are five, and maybe Shillington shouldn't be in that mix. He's more of an established NHLer, so we'll take him out. But Wolf, Zeri, Pospisil, Coronado. Those are four guys that are absolutely crucial pieces for you going into next season and going into the next 5 to 10 years. And honestly, there's no reason why they shouldn't all just be pounded with ice time down the stretch right now. As we talked about on Tuesday's or Wednesday's roundtable, use Zeri at center if you've got the opportunity to do so between now and the end of the regular season. See if you can get him a look down the middle and continue to give Pospisil lots of playing time and continue to have him develop and more and more comfortable in the role that he's going to play. We just talked about Coronado. We'll talk about Wolf in a second. But, yeah, I think that's a really, really crucial thing and a big-time opportunity for the Flames between now and the end of the regular season. It's not – you don't want to be prioritizing the bigger picture. You don't want to be focusing on what comes after this season at this stage. Like, you'd much rather be trying to lock down a playoff spot or chase down a playoff spot or jockeying for position. But – you still have opportunities to exploit here if you're the Flames, and I think it's important that they don't miss any of these opportunities.
It definitely feels sort of counterintuitive to how you spend the entire year, right? You talk about putting the best lineup out every single night and the guys that put you in a better position to win as often as possible, and now we've had to shift the entire narrative for this team, and it can be a bit difficult. And I understand the position that Ryan Husk is in because he's paid to win hockey games.
But to that point, he also has a boss by the name of Craig Conroy.
Well, absolutely. And so I think there has to be a pretty clear understanding between those two. And I don't have any reason to suggest that there's not, and I'm not suggesting that. But I think there, at some point, if it hasn't happened already, has to be a conversation of, hey, like, this is what we think we need to see down the stretch, and don't worry about how the L's reflect on your overall season as a coach. And I honestly think you have to do that if you're Craig Conroy and the management staff. You almost have to tell Ryan and the coaching staff, look, we're kind of more in development mode right now than we are in the wins and losses business. And that's, again, very counterintuitive to how you operated for the last 5-6 months, but you kind of got to bite the bullet right now if you're the Flames.
But I mean, and again, to Ryan Huska's point earlier that we played this hour, it's not like they're winning games right now. It's not like they won games when Coronado was a healthy scratch. Like, it's the lineup is what it is. They're a depleted lineup. They're a non-playoff team. They're a group that has traded away a lot of key players, and they're 15 points back. They're in a situation where I don't think having Coronado further up the lineup and demoting a guy like Kuzmenko or something like that is going to make a meaningful difference, impactful difference one way or the other to you winning hockey games. But what it can do, and they should be trying to win hockey games. They should be trying to not have this be a miserable finish to the season. As much as Flames fans, and rightfully so, are looking at this thing and saying, oh, geez, how high could the Flames end up being in the draft lottery odds? Could they get to, you know, a top 9, top 8 type situation? Where could they end up being? That's not what is being talked about inside that room. They should be trying to win. They should be focused on trying to win. But I just feel like There's no real meaningful difference between having a couple of young guys get some higher leverage spots than the way things are going right now. It's not like they've scored 6 goals in their last 4 games.
Yeah, you're not gonna find an argument for me. I think there's just that natural feeling that comes with,
yeah,
you know, because they were in the playoff race for so long, right? It's not like this was the mindset for this group from September and October. You know what I mean? Like, at this point in the year, it's pretty easy if you're San Jose or Chicago or anybody, because you've kind of been in that mindset all year long, and that's why I'm not arguing against it. I'm just saying if it feels weird for you as an observer of this team, as a fan of this team, or understanding where, you know, maybe the coaching staff has to come through, it's that the last couple of weeks have seen a massive shift in what this team is trying to accomplish, whether you agreed with the previous goal or not.
It is crazy how far they've fallen out in a very short period of time, hey?
Remember when Kuzmenko came in and scored the goal and they were in the locker room and he goes, playoffs! And we're like, yeah, playoffs! Maybe, just maybe they'd get in, and then reality hits you like a ton of bricks. And
it does.
And it sucks.
So it's March 28th now. 1 month ago on February 28th, the Flames were 5 out with a game in hand. So it's not like they... And that had been... Okay, you know what? I mean, they have... It's not like they were really that close ever. Like, they were closer than they are right now, and there was still life-ish. But on Feb 28th, they'd won 4 games in a row and were 5 back in Nashville for the final playoff spot in the Western
Conference.
That
was the killer to me, because that was the four. They went on a run, if you want to call it that, and they actually lost ground, did they not?
Well, because Nashville was...
They started the U2 trip or whatever, the U2 movement that's sweeping Nashville right now, and they didn't gain any ground. That's gotta be miserable.
Yep.
That's where you go, we've won 4 in a row, we got rid of some of our best players, and we still went out and played some really good hockey, and we're further back than when we started this. That's not a good spot to be in.
I honestly don't think the Flames have been in a playoff spot going all the way back to like early October. When they won their first game of the season, I think they were in a playoff spot then.
Didn't they get to within a point one night?
They may have gotten
within
a point.
And then Nashville won later in the evening or something and pushed them back to 3?
That sounds right. I'm just doing the day-by-day over at NHL.com and seeing. I think the last time they were in a playoff spot was October 14th.
So it's been a while.
It's been... And they've been chasing and on the outside ever since, which is a tough way to play and a tough way to go through the season. Just a couple of other quick notes before we hit on Dustin Wolf for a little bit. So the guy that comes back into this game, again, we don't know exactly what the forward lines are going to be, but we're expecting Thursday in St. Louis, all kinds of blender work from Ryan Huska and the coaching staff. Mangiapane out day-to-day. Dryden Hunt comes back in. I do think Hunt's a useful player for this organization going forward. I actually give that guy a lot of credit, and I know that he's taken a lot of lumps. I know that he's taken a lot of heat. It's not really his fault, but a lot of people are like, why is Dryden Hunt continue to get this opportunity or that opportunity, so on and so forth. But he does have a contract for next season. He's an NHL minimum player for next year. And Hunt, to me, has shown that in a pinch, if you need him to play in your top 9, he can do so passably. He's a very effective number 4th-line player. He's the consummate pro, so that if he's your 13th forward and needs to sit for a little bit, he's fine. And if you need him in the American League, he is a high-end AHLer. I think right now the Wranglers are missing Hunt as much as a lot of other guys in their roster, although credit to the Wranglers in a 2-rip shutout over Coachella Valley on Wednesday night. Huge, huge win for the Wranglers. But I do think having Hunt around for the next little bit is, and for next season, it's a nice piece to have because he is versatile. He can play up the lineup if you need him to. He gives you a little speed, an offensive punch on your 4th line. I don't mind Hunt being part of the fold here going forward.
Yeah, I'm a bit torn on this one now. I guess you'd have to... As long as Matt Coronado, and I guess that's the name for me, at least right now, as long as Matt Coronado's still getting time and you're not talking about pushing somebody else, like a younger player, out of the lineup, then yeah, I have no problem. I don't think Dryden Hunt has been forced into the lineup by any means. I think he's, to your point, I think he's earned his role, and it's a very tough one to play going back and forth between, hey, contribute to us on a nightly basis. Offensively, you're a first-line player, first over the boards on the power play, 20-minute-a-night guy in the American Hockey League to, I don't know, you might get 7 minutes, you might get 13 minutes at the NHL level, and you're asked to do things completely differently. I, I will never take that away from a guy because we've learned pretty quickly that it's not an easy spot for a lot of guys to live in, and he's done it for over 200 NHL games. So as long as it's not at the expense of any of the younger development, like I really don't have a problem with it because, again, I don't think he's been shoehorned into the lineup. I don't think he's been forced into the lineup. I think he's earned an everyday playing spot in the lineup, and as long as he continues to do that, then I think you throw him out there continuously if you're Ryan Huska, because he's clearly got some trust in him.
A few other things to touch on. It is Dustin Wolf getting the start Thursday night in St. Louis. This will be his fifth start in seven games, and that is one real positive for me down the stretch here, is that, you know, they have made sure to give Dustin Wolf his playing time. They said he's going to play, and we've talked about how he needs to get a significant stretch of games and a significant workload between now and the end of the regular season. Well, five starts and seven games, Logo, that'll do it. I know Markstrom was hurt for some of that, and Vladar has been the one on the shelf since then. But 5-7, if you're looking for more Dustin Wolf time, you'll take that. And on top of that, in the four starts he's made since this recall, he's won two of them. He's 2-2-0 and a .929 save percentage in those four starts. I know there's a lot of people who say, oh, he's only 6 feet and he's small. He's not a big enough goaltender. Well, in the last four starts, he's been fine. You'll take a .929 save percentage over a four-game stretch. And for me, a guy who's wanting to see more of Dustin Wolf, you'll take five starts in seven games.
Yeah, it's what you were hoping for at some point, maybe even earlier in the season if you're a Flames fan, so that maybe this would have come, I don't know, some way midway through the season. Or some people probably would have wanted it at the beginning of the season. But the fact of the matter is it's here now, and he continues on the best stretch he's ever been at the NHL level, and it kind of works out nicely into what you hope is another good playoff run for the Wranglers that he'll be front and center in, and then into a very important offseason where, you know, I think everybody around the team right now is assuming he'll be in a Flame sweater for the entire year. So, yeah, I think it's exactly what you wanted. We didn't know when it was going to happen, and it's unfortunate that it came due to an injury to Dan Vladar, but that's how pro sports works. That's how a lot of guys got their run in sport, is because somebody else hit the injured list or wasn't able to play for a while. And for Dustin, the only thing he can do is go out and show that he's capable of being at that level. And if you want to nitpick and be a negative guy about his size, then that's going to last forever. But I don't know how you could look at this last stretch of hockey from him and say that he hasn't proven to be an NHLer at these last 5 of 7 games.
And that's what I keep saying, is that, well, he's too small to succeed at the NHL level. Well, he has succeeded at the NHL level in these last four games. No question he has. He has wins in the NHL as a quote-unquote small goaltender. So over a small sample size, he can succeed. That's proven now. Like, he's done it. Question is, now over a larger sample size, can that continue, and can it continue at a high level? And we're not going to truly be able to start finding that out until going into next year and maybe even beyond. But he does get the start against St. Louis. Jordan Binnington in net for the Blues on a Thursday night. Logan Steinberg, we're underway this hour on Flames Talk. We're coming at you from our Doug Lacey's Basement Systems downtown studio. Do you have cracks in your walls, floors, or ceilings? Visit dlbasementsystems.com for a free estimate. They are all things basement-y.
Anything and everything Calgary Flames. It's all on Flames Talk. Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Time now for our Daily Flames Roundtable on this Thursday. Brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. Race into spring with a freshly clean car. Book one of the 32 service bays at MercedesBenzCountryHills.ca and they'll revitalize your exterior paint finish. It's Steinberg, Logan Gordon. Now the voice of the Flames, Derek Wills, joins us to complete our Daily Flames Roundtable. Gents, Thursday night in St. Louis. Lines are in a blender and Andrew Mangiapane is out. Mangiapane day-to-day with an undisclosed injury, so will not play against the St. Louis Blues Thursday night. Gents, overall, how have we felt about Andrew Mangiapane and his season this year?
Two words. just okay. I mean, I think expectations were skewed by two things. Number one, him scoring a career high 35 goals. And then number two, the contract that he got after that season, a 3-year, $17.4 million deal, a $5.8 million average annual value. And when you get rewarded with that type of contract, expectations are going to go up. But I'm not sure that that was necessarily fair for Andrew Mangiapane, because, you know, prior to scoring 35 goals, he scored 17 goals and then 18 goals and then 35 and then 17 again. Now, this season with 13 goals, he's on pace for 15, which would be the lowest of his NHL career, five seasons as a full-time player in this league. So that's why I say just okay, because he's not really that far off what he's done in every season but one in the NHL. And I think he's been really effective since being put on the left side of a line with Michael Backlund and Blake Coleman. And most guys are effective playing with Backlund and Coleman, but those two guys definitely seem to bring out the best in Mangiapane. So yeah, just okay. I mean, would I like him to score 20? Sure. But he's only done that once. So I'm not really sure it's fair to expect them to do that every year.
Yeah. I have to admit, I think below expectations is kind of how I'd put it. I think Andrew was one of the guys I thought this year was, you know, pretty poised with some of the new opportunities, guys, to excel a little bit more and maybe prove that he could get maybe not back to that career season, but more closely to that. And I'd say especially of late, maybe the last, I don't know, handful of games, maybe call it 10 games or so, the level of play has really just sort of settled for me at a spot that I don't think is good enough for Andrew. I think he's capable of much more. I found in his game, and I don't know if you guys agree, I think he's trying to be that offensive guy too often for me, and it's gotten away from what's made him really successful when he was that grinding, forechecking, really menace on the puck in the offensive zone, and didn't have to be a pretty snapshot from the faceoff dot. They were dirty goals. They were greasy. And being on the line with Backlund and Coleman can sometimes be a pretty cushy spot. And I don't know that he's taken advantage of that as much recently as he has when he originally got put on that line a couple of months ago now. And given the cap hit and given, I think, the expectations as a guy that's not a veteran by the terms of like a guy like Nazem Kadri or, you know, even Jonathan Huberdeau, but a guy that's been here enough and been through the system, I think I've expected more from Andrew this season, if I'm being honest.
Yeah, it's I think what, so we're probably talking about a 40-point season and I don't know, probably realistically a 15 to 17 goal season probably is what we're talking about when it comes to Mangiapane this year. Guys, I think, Derek, to your point, I do think that maybe now when we talk about him, the contract and the 35-goal season are applied more than they should be when talking about what Mange actually is as a player. I think, to me, what Andrew Mangiapane is and was for all of last year and has been for most of this year, specifically since being back on the Backlund line the last number of months, Andrew Mangiapane is a very effective middle six winger who can add some secondary offense, who can be nice for you on your number two power play, and you just know is going to give you effective minutes at 5-on-5. May not be spectacular minutes or dominant minutes, but they'll be effective because you know he's going to be responsible defensively. You know that he's going to be one of those players that you can put out there against the best players on the other side and not worry about him being exposed. And you know that he can chip in with double-digit goals each and every year. I think what we're starting to realize is Mangiapane, I think he's got a few 20-goal seasons left in him. I do. He turns 28 next week, and which is crazy to think about. I remember vividly he looked exactly the same interviewing him on the risers with my iPhone at the draft in 2015. I remember it vividly, talking to him that day, and he looks the exact same now as he did then. But he turns 28 next week. But I still think he's got a couple more 20-goal seasons in him. I don't think he's got another 30-goal season in him, but I do think that he's a guy who can flirt with 20 a few more times in his career. But I think now we know what he is. He is a really nice middle six piece that probably a $5.8 million cap it isn't where it should be, but still is a bona fide NHLer and a guy that helps teams. So, you know, I it's kind of been that year for him. I think, Wilsey, the first month or so of the season, month or two of the season, we didn't really have, there was really not a, he wasn't playing full time with the Backlund line yet again. It wasn't as good. Ever since he's been back on that line, I think it plays best to his identity. I think the fact that they play against the best players every single night means that he has to make sure that the work boots are strapped on and ready to go every single night, and I think that's helped him as well. So that, to me, is what I think Mangiapane is. That's what I think he has been for the most part over the last two seasons, and no, I don't think he's going to be one of your primary goal scorers going forward. I don't think 30, 35 goals a year is something that we can expect from him. But to be that effective middle six guy who can chip in with some important secondary offense, I think we can still expect that from him going forward, because it's what we've seen for the last two seasons, including this one.
Yeah, and again, I said earlier that it's probably unfair for us to expect him to be the player he was when he scored 35 goals and earned a $17.4 million contract. But I guess with that contract comes higher expectations. So maybe it's not unfair for us to expect that from him, but unrealistic might be a better word, because he's been a good player in four of his five seasons. He was a great player in that one season where he scored 35 goals. And Logan, I'm going to agree with you on one thing and disagree with you mildly on another. So I'm going to agree with you that for Andrew Mangiapane to be at his best, he has to get a little greasier. And I think it was Brad Treloving who said that Andrew Mangiapane is at his best when at the end of a shift, he's looking through the ear hole in his helmet, right? So he's going to the hard areas. He's mixing things up. You know, I've often said that he makes more plays from one knee or two knees than any player in the NHL. That's when Andrew Mangiapane is at his best. What I'm going to kind of disagree with you on, and maybe you meant it a little bit differently than I understood it, but I don't think that playing in a line with Michael Backlund and Blake Coleman is a cushy spot, because, Pat, to your point, that line, especially since the Elias Lindholm trade, and even before that, but I would say to a greater extent after that, they have been asked to do all the heavy lifting. You know, they're out there for defensive zone starts, but they're out there trying to shut down the other team's top line. And Logan, maybe what you meant was that whoever plays with Backlund and Coleman, those two guys tend to bring the best out of their line mate. And they certainly have done that for Mangiapane, but you know, he's a good player, but a lot like just about everybody else on the team. I'd like to see him work a little harder to get to the tough areas, and easier said than done. For me up in the broadcast booth, and easier said than done for a guy who's not all that big. He's, you know, 5'10", 184. So, you know, we're asking a smaller player by NHL standards to go with the bigger guys, try to make it tough for the smaller guys to get to. So he's had an okay season, but I think he'd probably be the first to tell you that he expects more out of himself. And I can understand why some fans are left wanting for more.
Yeah, you're not far off of where I was, Wilsey, and I do mean, you know, I think it can be a nice spot with those two guys, because they definitely do bump you up regardless of who's in that spot. But I don't want to take away from him. It's important that you pointed out that, you know, the defensive responsibility and, you know, being, I think, probably the most consistently trusted line by the head coach, he gets some of that. He gets as much credit in that as a Backlund and a Coleman does when they're together as well.
And honestly, I think that's where he fits best, whether it's with the Flames or on another team, is being that guy on a shutdown line, that can still chip in with some offense. I think that's kind of the role that fits Mangiapane best now that we are talking about a guy who turns 28 next week. It's Steinberg, Logan, and, of course, Derek Wills, the voice of the Calgary Flames, on your Daily Flames Roundtable on this Thursday. Speaking of that line, gents, how much he currently is co-leading the team with 28 goals. How much of an accomplishment would 30 goals be for Blake Coleman? How neat a little check mark on the resume would that be for Blake?
It would be huge. I mean, he's 32. There aren't a lot of guys around the NHL having career years at the age of 32. And clearly, Blake Coleman is having a career year. And not only does he lead the team or co-lead the team in goals with a career-high 28, he's also tied for second of the team in points with a career-high 51, which is a whopping 13 more than he's had in any other season. And there's still 11 games left this season. So, you know, he's been fantastic, and it really couldn't happen to a better guy. Co-winner of the Peter Marr Good Guy Award last season. Just an absolute pleasure to deal with off the ice. And, you know, on the ice, he's been brilliant for this team this year. Leads the team with a plus 21 rating. Here's a crazy stat. So the Flames have won 14 straight games that Blake Coleman has scored in. Now, one of the reasons why that stat makes a bit more sense to me is that he does lead the league in empty net goals. So he's scored to pad the Flames' lead in games where they've been up one or two or more in the third period. And wouldn't it be cool to see him tie or even break the NHL record for most empty net goals in a season, currently had by Pavel Bure and Alex Ovechkin? You may have heard of him. So, you know, he's just a couple of goals away from tying their NHL record for most empty net goals in a season with 9. And some people scoff at that. Well, empty net goals, they don't mean as much. But we just talked about, you know, that line of Michael Backlund, Andrew Mangiapane, and Blake Coleman. And because they're so defensively responsible, they're quite often out there in the final minute or two of a one-goal game where the Flames' opponent has pulled their goaltender trying to get a little closer or tie things up. And they've earned that ice time because of the way they've played. So he's had a fantastic season, and it would be super cool to see him get to 30. The whole team has slowed down offensively of late. They've only got 6 goals during their 4-game losing streak. You would think they'd snap out of it at some point in time, maybe even on Thursday night against the Blues. And, hey, maybe Blake Coleman gets 2 tonight and gets to 30, and we can talk about that on Friday.
Yeah, I think it'd be a tremendous accomplishment. You laid out so many great points, but to me, it's the age that it's coming at and the fact that, you know, Blake told us at the beginning of the season, guys, he wanted to take on more of an offensive role. He thought that that was going to be important for him, knowing some of the talent they lost. And, you know, the main guy was Tyler Toffoli, right, last season. And me and Pat talked about this earlier in the week. I don't know that Blake Coleman was near the top of the list of guys you thought would score 30 this year for the group. And to do that and not take a defensive step back, like you mentioned, Wilsey, and still be that guy for Ryan Huska and the rest of the coaching staff when they need that defensive shutdown line, that all trust line, and still be able to produce like he has. I mean, there were some times, guys, where he was just on a tear this season, and he just continues to do all the right things, and to be able to push at this point in his career to get better somewhere when the norm was good enough for me. Like, I wouldn't have criticized Blake Coleman had he come in with another 15 to 20 goal season, because you know he's going to put in the work. You know what you're going to get for him. But for the guy to take on more responsibility this year and not have any part of his game, in my mind, suffer anywhere else, Pat, it's really damn impressive, and it's something I hope he gets to before it's all said and done.
Yeah, I'm just really, look, there, it's been a year full of frustration. It's been a year full of negatives for the Flames in a lot of ways. And I just think as we go down the stretch, it's also important to highlight and underline some of the positives. And honestly, I think the season Blake is having, regardless of if he doesn't score again and 28's what he ends with, I think that Blake Coleman's season is one of the positives that we do need to underline, because first of all, he's an awesome ambassador for the Flames. You know, for a team that has taken a lot of body blows here over the last 2 years, for the knocks that the Flames have had for not being able to retain players and American guys not wanting to be here, I think it's really important to continue underlining that Blake Coleman,
And I know you can tell me all you want. Well, you got more money here, or you got more term here. Whatever. Blake Coleman decided coming off back-to-back Stanley Cups to sign a long-term contract with the Calgary Flames. He said, Calgary is a place, after doing my research with my wife, this is a place we want to raise our family. And this is the place that we want to set down our roots for the next, you know, better part of a half decade. And I think that's an important thing to underline, an important thing to talk about, and an important ambassador to have for your organization, both to other players and as we all know, guys, I mean, who speaks better, who represents the team better than Blake does? And I'm not saying others don't, but he is one of the absolute go-tos after a big win or a tough loss. You're going to Blake all the time. So for him to be having a career year at the age of 32, to your point, Wilsey, and for him to be two goals away from a plateau that I don't know if he ever thought that he'd hit in the NHL. A guy that, you know, had to go the hard road to the NHL. There's not a lot of Texas-born NHLers, especially when he was coming up. There's not a lot of Texas-born NHL prospects. And here's this guy who was a third-round pick who went 4 years to a not-so-powerhouse NCAA program and had to work his way up through the minors to eventually get to where he is now. For him to hit a pretty cool milestone that not everybody hits in their NHL career, that'd be pretty cool. It's one of the number one things that I'm rooting for down the stretch. And Derek, I know that team and team accolades are the most important thing, absolutely, even where the Flames are right now. But I made this comparison on Wednesday's show. Like, knowing how important Blake is to that locker room and to this team, like, if the Flames were to go out of their way down their stretch to pump those goal totals and to make sure he gets to 30 or 35 or whatever the case may be, I'd have no problem with that. It's one of those things that can bring a group together when they're not going to make the playoffs, and that'd be something neat to see as well.
Maybe the Flames should do with Blake Coleman what the Capitals have been doing with Alex Ovechkin. Leave him out there for a full 2 minutes on the power play. Put him out there every time the other team pulls their goaltender. Just try to pad those goal stats for Blake Coleman. And I say that tongue-in-cheek, but that is what the Caps are doing, is Ovechkin tries to chase down Wayne Gretzky. But something else I've enjoyed watching is kind of the back-and-forth battle between Blake Coleman and Yegor Sharangovich. One guy pulls out in front of the other guy, and then quite often in the same game, the other guy will score once or twice, and back and forth they go as they battle to be this team's leader in goals. And that's been another positive story for me, is the first trade that Craig Conroy made was with the Devils, sending Tyler Toffoli there and getting Yegor Sharangovich in a third-round pick back. And that trade, that's a win already. I'll put a W on that right now. Sharangovich has had an outstanding season, tied with Coleman for the team leading goals, and trying to become just the sixth player in franchise history to score 30 in his first season with the team. And there are some pretty impressive names on that list. So watching those two guys battle back and forth has been fun. And, you know, Blake Coleman is a guy who, he's got 7 empty net goals. And you could argue that those are easier goals and easier points to get. But I would argue that earning that ice time is hard. And here's something that kind of balances that out, just to finish up on Blake Coleman. So, yeah, he's got 7 empty net goals. But you know what? He's also tied for 3rd in the NHL in shorthanded points. And he's 4th in the league in shorthanded goals. And I would argue that shorthanded goals and points are the hardest points to get, because A, you've got to earn that ice time. And then B, you got to go out there. Your primary focus is on killing off the penalty. But your secondary focus is, hey, we get an opportunity to create some offense here. Let's do it. And both Blake Coleman and, ironically, Yegor Sharangovich have done a great job of that.
Good stuff, Wilsey. We'll see you here in a little bit, hey?
Okay, see you soon.
He's Derek Wills. He's Logan Gordon. My name is Pat Steinberg, and that's our Daily Flames Roundtable on this Thursday. Get you a few texts, 960-960, on some of what we touched on the roundtable this Thursday. This from a very grumpy person. Keep telling yourself, Pat, it's been a year filled with reality, something you guys are not used to. Keep telling yourself that Coleman signed in Calgary for anything besides money. I'm going to, as I say to a lot of people, do we know this number?
It's the same one that's texted in, I think, every day this week, that no one wants to sign in Calgary.
Why you got
to
be so grumpy,
everyone's
man?
Leaving. And
like, hey, come on down.
Like every opposition broadcast.
We're at 535 7th Ave Southwest. And come knock on the door. We'll go over to the Shoppers. I'll buy you a Snickers. Like, come on, I'll get you a Snickers, and everything will be all right.
Pat, just Tony Stark that guy.
Oh, yeah. I'm right here. Come on, Mandarin. I'm right here.
Boom.
Well, no, our address is very, very readily accessible on
the
internet.
We have a security guard, and she smells like perfume. Let's go.
This says, and the best part is he crushed McMuffin into the boards. Let's not forget about
that. I crushed McMuffins.
Different,
same thing.
Different type of thing that they're discussing. Oh. Still, one of my highlights of the season was that game in Edmonton, the beating the Flames put on the Oilers. Yes, I'm aware that the Oilers are going to the playoffs
here
and the Flames
the
aren't. Let us have this. But that hit that he laid on McDavid was pretty nice.
You regret bringing that up.
Probably. A couple of the texts, I want to read you this text, for instance, and I responded to this text, but it says, Mangiapane is a terrible contract, 5.8 per year to be completely irrelevant, never wins a puck pedal, knocked on his ass, left, right, and center, too many giveaways, an AHLer at best, and to which I responded, what American Hockey League player averages 40 points a year in the NHL? Look, he may not be a guy that $5.8 million looks super sexy on, and he may not be a guy who's going to score 35 again, but to sit here and tell me that Andrew Mangiapane is not an NHLer or an American League hockey player at best. Is simply false. He is a bona fide, effective National Hockey League winger on most teams in the NHL. Don't tell, well, like this text
35 goal score, Pat, or he's an NHL, that's all it is.
This text came in and said, oh, wow, he wouldn't even be on most lineups in the NHL. Wrong. Absolutely false. He would be playing on any NHL team's roster right now. He'd be in the lineup on any, because he is a very effective two-way winger who can get you 15 to 20 goals a year and play against the best players on the other team. Those are good players. Though, do they get paid $5.8 million? Probably not. And the contract timing probably worked out bingo bango for Andrew Mangiapane. But get out of here with this. He's not an NHLer garbage just because he hasn't scored 35 since signing the contract. It's just full-on false.
Spectrums.
That'll wrap up the hour, and that'll wrap up our Daily Flames Roundtable, brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. Race into spring with a freshly clean car. Book one of the 32 service bays at MercedesBenzCountryHills.ca, and they'll revitalize your exterior paint finish.